We're off into the unknown once again here in Bozeman, Montana. Photonics and quantum physics and quantum, well, understanding. How much understanding do you have about that? How is it relevant in your life? And you might be surprised at how much is really going on in the photonics and quantum industry. I know I am, and we're in Bozeman, Montana today at Engine Works. We'll talk about that. It's one of those technology hubs. We're kind of continuing our trip yesterday with the CSI Summit, Investing in Montana. And I thought, you know, we're overdue for a conversation about how photonics and quantum physics and quantum, I don't even know what to call it, science, quantum understanding, how that has a daily impact on our lives. And so we're going to explore that here today on Voices of Montana, live from Engine Works again. It's kind of a technology hub and part of the Montana State University campus as well. Let's just get right into it here. Friday, I know we like to welcome you here for a Friday. Usually that means only two more working days this week. But I'm hoping that that's not your case and you have a Montana weekend to hang out in and everything's working out fine. Alex Pruden is with us. He's CEO and co-founder of Project 11. And I know I've been teasing this a little bit, but I can't. All I can do is tease it a little bit because, Alex, what you're doing security-wise and quantum computing, I'm dying to hear from you, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. Yeah, thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for coming along. And then chatting with Daniel Giuliano as well, 10 years with this technology transfer office. He's the director now for at MSU and a doctor as well. I'll throw that out there just because it's pretty cool. I mean, it means something. Board member two of the Montana Photonics and Quantum Alliance. And we have spoken with Jason Yeager over the years about this. And then I just thought it was really time to get caught up a little more into this conversation. So thank you, Daniel. How are you, sir?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me today.
Thanks for coming in here. Again, this is Engine Works is what it is. And we'll talk about that. I think people are understanding the technology hub and the idea behind it. I think it's been a really successful idea. But with Alex, I want to get right into what Project 11 is. And you can go to Project 11, all spelled out, .com, and kind of look at the services there. But I don't even know what I'm looking at.
Well, you know, I, to be clear, the business model for Project 11 is mostly oriented towards financial institutions and fintechs because it's a cybersecurity company. So it's a cybersecurity company specifically oriented, you know, for financial technology. And it's focused on the quantum connection is because quantum computers, which are, you know, computers that are kind of special based on the principles of quantum mechanics, you know, that they enable a lot of things. But one of the things that they also result in is, you know, it basically breaks today's encryption or cryptography, right? And so there's a requirement to build and implement a bunch of new cryptography. By the way, for folks that maybe were paying attention to the news, there's a Wall Street Journal article out this week. The White House just signed an executive order basically mandating that all government systems so anyone who accesses federal government systems, all of those systems need to be secured with what is called post-quantum cryptography by 2031. So we focus on that. But maybe I'll just say a couple words briefly on the topic of relevance about quantum mechanics. And you know, so like I said, quantum computers are computers that are based on quantum mechanics. But quantum mechanics is the most accurate physical theory of the world that has ever been devised. And so everything relies on it at a physical level, right? So the, you know, and how do you use this on a daily basis? I mean, computers, basically every computer is basically built on the understanding that quantum mechanics gives you about the world of communications of all types, fiber optics, etc. Photonics itself is, you know, based on your and is able to manipulate quantum effects. And so, I mean, really, quantum is all around us. It's this very kind of theoretical thing that's incredibly hard to intuit, but really, I mean, it is in many ways the most real physical theory that we have.
You're trying to, as I understand it, and there's a nice term for photonics. As we understand electronics, it's electrons. Photonics is light, so to speak. So there's an easy understanding there. You don't get that with when you try to explain quantum mechanics, do you?
Yeah, and thankfully, you know, we live in an age of YouTube and ChatGPT, so you can. It's much easier these days to get basic explainers. But you know, there's a lot of very counterintuitive, aspects of it, right? For example, inside of a quantum computer, one reason that a quantum computer can break these otherwise secure systems is, you know, these quantum computers are made up of qubits. And you think of a bit inside of a regular computer can be either 0 or 1. In a quantum computer, a qubit can be both at the same time. And what does it mean for a qubit? What does it mean for a particle to hold both, to be two things at once? There's not like a macro scale physical analog. But yet, again, this is a very accurate theory that's been tested time and time again, right? And so I think that's why it's hard for people to understand, but it doesn't make it any less real. And ultimately, you don't need a deep understanding of how quantum physics works to be able to kind of deal with and benefit from its application.
I'm going to turn to you on that one, Daniel, because that is music to my ears, and probably as an educator, music to your ears too.
Well, in my role at the university, we look at the technologies that are being developed by the university, and we try to get those technologies out into the world so they can have the societal impact that the researchers imagine and that the society demands from the university. So that's the role of the Technology Transfer Office, and in that role, we're also looking at what are the technologies that could be useful to the industry of Montana, right? MSU exists to serve right. The people of Montana. We're very conscious of that.
It does a good job.
Thank you very much. I'll relay that message. Yeah. And so that's why I'm on the board of the Montana Photonics and Quantum Alliance. It's because with the local industry and the university, we can really see what is the maximum impact that we can have together.
And so, as Alex had kind of noted, you don't have to have the deep understanding of quantum. You don't have to have an epiphany to be able to work with quantum mechanics. Do kids come? And I know there's a kind of a different office for students who have ideas and want to throw them out there, and then those that get developed and are commercial, kind of where you take over. Are they scared of that?
I would say students are scared of it. I would say I'm scared of it. I have a PhD in physics. I took 4 quantum mechanics classes. As Alex said, I do not have an intuitive understanding of quantum mechanics, but also, as Alex said, it's an extremely, tremendously useful theory, well understood, well proven, and pretty much nothing in the modern world would work if we didn't have it and couldn't apply it and make it work.
Go ahead, Alex, and talk about where those applications are for, and maybe they're just unlimited, I suppose, but what's the relevance?
Oh, yeah. Well, like I said, I mean, I think quantum mechanics is the physics of the very small, right? So anything that deals with small, small scales is affected. So like I said, two examples I used earlier, I'll say again, is, this laptop that's sitting in front of us or sitting in front of me, they measure the distance between, the various gates on the board in nanometers, right? So these are where quantum effects they have to be accounted for. Same thing for photonics and fiber optics applications. You've got a cable that's basically, multiplexing a bunch of different laser beams, and then there's receivers on either end, and you have to take into account quantum mechanics there, especially for very high performance type applications. MRIs and imaging. Actually, recently there's been a lot of interest in using quantum for sensing broadly, not just for medical applications, but in, I was a former Army officer.
And thank you for your service, by the way.
Thank you. But yeah, that gentleman or the pilot who was shot down over Iran, one of the technologies that they apparently used to help find him was a quantum sensing unit, right? Wow. And quantum, again, because it's the physics of the very small, they have the ability to be very sensitive. And so there's a tons of defense applications, right? And, and you expand beyond those to like thinking about something a little bit more Montana, that may be relevant to folks here is like exploration for new oil and gas, minerals, critical critical resources like that also can be enabled by quantum technology. So it's everywhere, right? And then I think I would say even just here in this building, there are folks like down at QCore. There's a an initiative that is hosted here that I think the university is actually involved with, and they have a I walk past their office every day, and there's an artist in there who's like basically making art inspired by kind of the weirdness of quantum, right? And so in that sense, it's even more than just a technical thing. It's like it's this kind of intangible idea that's quite unintuitive, but can inspire beautiful art, which we get to enjoy every day.
I get that because in my mind, and I hear the word quantum, I'm seeing light and colors and things like that.
There you go.
So it sparks my imagination. Alex Pruden, again, with us, Project 11 is the company, cybersecurity. Daniel Giuliano as well, director of the Technology Transfer Office for MSU. Daniel, we'll get to you and have you talk a little bit about EngineWorks. I want to get back to you, Alex, about good guy, bad guy when it comes to quantum understanding and quantum applications. Your main focus is cybersecurity, and I would imagine that is a high priority right now when it comes to everything that everybody's developing in photonics and quantum.
Yeah, cybersecurity is, I think, gotten to be more and more important with every passing year, because I think more and more of our lives have a digital aspect, right? And, you know, the area of cybersecurity that I focus on specifically, which is finance and fintech, I mean, you know, you go back 10 years ago, I think most people, or, you know, many people were still using, you know, kind of regular checks and depositing checks at the bank, you know, but I think now even more and more people are using everything online, right? So interacting through a phone or interacting through a website to send money, receive money, cash checks, whatever it may be. And, you know, all of that then has to be secured. And inevitably, like, that, you know, is a nuanced and difficult thing without a quantum computer in the mix, right? And when you add a quantum computer there, especially for systems that are highly critical, or, you know, larger financial institutions that don't, you know, they're not worried about a single bank account, potentially billions of dollars, you know, this becomes very relevant. And so I guess, like, cybersecurity is all about defining a threat model and then mitigating risk, right? And I think this is, you know, this mitigating risk piece is something that I think should be intuitively familiar to everyone. You know, you get in a car, you wear a seatbelt, right? And so, you know, you do that because the risk of getting in a crash, you don't want to die. You maybe just want to walk away with an injury, or maybe with nothing at all, right? So mitigating risk is really the name of the game for cybersecurity. A quantum computer in the hands of an adversary is just another risk to mitigate, but ultimately it's one of many.
Yeah, and I suppose that keeps some people up at night, but keeps you and your team at their desk. So
yeah,
to speak.
I mean the people that don't want to stay up at night, pay us, and hopefully we'll keep paying us to make sure that they can sleep well at night. Right, that's the idea. Right.
Yeah.
So in some sense, it's almost like, I guess, it's insurance, right? And you know, and cybersecurity, I guess the last thing I would say, and this is true of finance too, it's about trust, right? Trust is earned slowly, lost quickly. And so, yeah. You know, in these regimes, you know, you got to really be diligent, detailed, meticulous about earning people's trust and protecting what they value.
Daniel, I think you'd have some comments about that as director of this technology transfer office, about earning trust. But, you know, when he says pay us, right, that's one of the things I think a lot of people, and I'm talking to youngsters who are excited about this, and there's energy behind it, and everything is open to them, so to speak. But, you know, at the end, you've got to have a payoff. And so tell me about what the transfer office does in that regard.
Well, the university is doing all kinds of research. It's almost up to $300 million a year worth of research. And I should point out, most of that money comes from the federal government, not from Montana taxpayers. Mm-hmm. And so lots of new knowledge is created and disseminated. Part of that is going just through the education to the students at the university, but some of that is published. But some of those technologies actually could be turned into either products or services in the real world.
And you don't want to miss that opportunity.
And you don't want to miss that opportunity. Yeah. And it's not just, you know, it's not really primarily about money for the university. Yeah. Yes, economic development for Montana and beyond. But you want the research to have the societal impact that it has the potential to do. And it eventually, you know, at the end of the day, if someone will pay you for the product or service, it tells you that that has some sort of value. So in the office, we're trying to bridge the gap between the research creating the new knowledge and how that knowledge can be used down the road to create a new product or service. And oftentimes that's through a new startup at the university, and that could be graduate students or even undergraduate students, could be faculty, could be a combination of all of those folks together. And it's a long journey going from, I have a cool idea that I think someone might be able to use, to here's a product that people will pay for, and now I have a self-sustaining company.
Alex, tell us about that journey.
I mean, I don't know if there's more to say. It's a long journey to go from an idea that you think sounds cool to someone paying you for it. And I've, you know, this is my second startup. And before this, I was in venture capital, where people would come to me and we would fund their startups. And I think, you know, there's never, in my opinion, been a better time to start a business, and specifically a technology business, in Montana. And I think Montana, so first off, the tools that exist today to, you know, to basically help get a business off the ground, to get turn an idea into at least something you can test to find out if someone is willing to pay for it. Mm-hmm. It's never been easier to do that. with AI and with all kinds of tools that are out there. I also think the environment here has been super friendly. The state legislature has really kind of done a good job of passing regulations. I mean, one area that's relevant to Project 11 is, you know, digital assets and blockchain-based assets, and the state legislature just passed recently a framework around that, and so they're leaning very, very far forward. I would say the university here punches way above its weight in terms of the research, the quality of research that they perform. Actually, on quantum computing, I mean, there was a recent paper published with a researcher who was a co-author here at MSU, but with Microsoft, and it was basically, it's like on the cutting edge of the quantum computers that Microsoft is building, and it's like arguably state of the art, and that's right here, and you know, in the small town. And so I think, you know, there's a lot of people here that are highly innovative. There's a great ecosystem between the university and between like the state. Obviously, we get a lot of federal dollars here too, but yeah, to me, I mean, there was a no-brainer. In terms of where to start this business, I chose here because I think, yeah, it's never been a better time.
I appreciate that. We're going to take a break and come on back, and we'll talk about the no better time and what else is on the plate for a lot of people, and still get back into understanding the, you know, what photonics is and what quantum mechanics and the future for us. And I think, you know, for all of us, we're looking at it, and it's coming, and it's kind of going to present itself and, you know, right into our lap. And how are we going to make the most of it for our families, for our communities, for our lives, and for those we leave behind. EngineWorks is the place here. It's part of the Innovation Campus at Montana State University. We are live once again. Tom Schultz alongside. Welcome back here to Voices of Montana. Thank you for making us a part of your Montana Day. 2 decades strong and working on 3 here. Alex Pruden is with us. He's CEO and co-founder of Project 11. That's a quantum mechanics, quantum computing, cybersecurity company based here in Bozeman, Montana. Also with us is Daniel Giuliano, director of the Technology Transfer Office here at MSU. Again, part of this Innovation Campus. And thank you guys both for being here. And I really appreciate your approach, Alex, about trying to bring this down to everybody's everyday level, so to speak. And I think a lot of people are worried about it. I myself, I'll just speak as every man. I'm scared at what could happen, but I don't want to be scared. I want to get, you know, educated about it and move it in the right direction. And so maybe we'll get on that a little bit later. But back to the EngineWorks, right? This tech hub. I have found that hub model, since it started kind of catching on across the country, to be pretty effective in terms of generating at least some startups that have potential. Tell us what this is.
Sure. Maybe we can talk about the Innovation Campus, how it relates to the university itself. So MSU has its campus proper, right, where people go to classes, but the Innovation Campus is adjacent, just west of the main campus, and it's on land that's owned by the University Foundation. Currently, there are 3 buildings on the Innovation Campus. We have an Applied Research Lab. There's the EngineWorks building where we are right now, and then there's a company, Aurora, which is a big photonics company here in Bozeman that has its own building right next to us. EngineWorks in particular is designed to be able to host different companies that need some space and want to be in the same building with many other new innovative campuses, or new innovative companies. So Alex's company is one, and you know, you can have a company of one person, you could have, you know, a much larger company, dozens or more in the same space. It's 88,000 square feet, if I recall. And it also hosts a smaller, a smallish research organization from the university. You mentioned QCore. QCore is the quantum organization at the university focused on researching quantum topics, quantum materials, quantum algorithms. There's quantum computers here. And we also have an incubator space here for small companies that would like to be able to work with each other, interface with the university. We have resources for them to kind of learn what would make, you know, to help them be successful, connect them with investors and others that, you know, service providers, and to just learn from each other. So there's an incubator space here that we just started under the Technology Transfer Office here in EngineWorks. And there's also space available for others to come. If someone has an idea or a company that they would like to move to this location, it's available.
What are the challenges
with the space?
Yeah, for companies coming in and for tech hubs and.
Well, you know, cost is always a part of it. Mm-hmm. You know, especially if you're coming to Bozeman, the space is not that cheap. Attracting the talent and being able to pay them, especially living in Bozeman, is not that cheap. Mm-hmm. And then there's just the inherent challenges of starting up your company and going from the idea to the the product or services and not running out of money in the meantime. For these tiny, tiny companies, which are often started by students, faculty, or postdocs that are coming out of the university, they most of them are extremely sharp technically, but they maybe don't have much or even any business experience.
Yeah.
So just the basics of, you know, how do you start the company? How do you think about the company? They come from a technical perspective, and they are usually convinced they have some technical innovation that is amazing, and they're often correct. But that doesn't mean you're going to have a product or service that people will pay for.
Yeah.
And so we hold their hands step by step as to what it takes to get from here to there. And often the first step is what we call customer discovery, which is simply, who's going to be your customer? What are they looking for from you? What is it that you're going to provide to them, and will they pay for it? And that probably seems obvious to anyone who's owned a business or maybe even worked in a business. But when you've spent your whole life doing technical development, that's not so obvious. You think, once I solve this problem, I'm going to make millions of dollars. It's going to be great. And the truth is, getting from here to there is a huge, long path.
That's right. Like your notes might not end up where you thought they were, so to speak, right?
Yeah.
Alex, how did that apply for Project 11, all those opportunities and challenges?
Yeah, well, you know, you're always asking yourself, who is the customer and am I serving their needs? And I think it is obvious, but it's, you know, even for folks that have business experience like me, I think, you know, you never stop asking that question, because that's really at the heart of what makes a business successful. One of my favorite business books was by the founder of Intel, or, you know, an early founder of Intel and the CEO of Intel, Andy Grove. And he has a book titled Only the Paranoid Survive, which I feel like is a good business book title. Anyway, but I think one thing that's really great about EngineWorks specifically, and I've been a part of, in a variety of forums, you know, different types of spaces like this, or, you know, I've been part of various incubators or accelerators. And I think one huge benefit of this, and being having it be next to the university, is you have, you know, folks that are coming out that have a tremendous talent, but they can, you know, you're in a community of other people doing this same, on this same journey. And it can be very easy, speaking as a startup founder, to, you know, just feel like you're very isolated, and it's only you, right? And I think it's a great feeling of community that Innovation Campus broadly, but also EngineWorks specifically, brings, where, you know, folks can work side by side, you know, on different things, but learn from each other and take those lessons away. And then the other nice thing about that is that, you know, one or two of these companies end up being successful in terms of raising a little bit of money and getting some customers. That tends to generate a little bit of a flywheel, where then you have investors come and, you know, and start, you know, being interested to put money here. In fact, there's a family office that's opening its doors here in this building. There's also, just in town, there's a venture fund that's now, I think they're raising their fifth or sixth fund, I'm not sure, but Next Frontier Capital, you know, and they're investing more and more locally. And so this is kind of the great thing about spaces like this, and with the university's collaboration, is you can kind of get this technical talent. You can, you know, give people on these, or open people's eyes to this, the opportunity that founding a company provides, and then give them support through all the things that EngineWorks provides.
And EngineWorks is really designed to be able to foster that, right? There's common areas. It's made for the different companies to be able to mix. There's the kitchen area, and have just those dynamics that you described. And the incubator space that I described earlier is almost like a microcosm of that. Everyone in those tiny companies is going to be in the same room, having desks and chairs, going along the same journey together. It's like a microcosm of what is happening within EngineWorks.
Yeah, and they've got a great makerspace over there. There's a bunch of 3D printers, a little, you know, mini kind of CNC machine for all kinds of prototyping. It's really awesome, like the resources that exist here.
And I'm so glad that focus has come about, helping businesses get established and understanding that there are many different needs inside that. I don't have enough time in this break. I got like 30 seconds left. And you've got a chart that I want to talk about here, because as I look at it, it's very visual. It's one of those J curves where you start down low, and then this company begat that company, begat that company, so to speak. And all of a sudden, you have a vibrant community here in Bozeman, Montana. You know, sometimes I like to throw out some statistics here, but we're talking about something that's kind of like above me, so I don't have much. The internet runs on light. Photon has no mass. You know, what do those things mean, and what do they mean for our future? That's what we're talking about here today. Welcome back here from Montana for Montana, Voices of Montana, live from Engine Works. It's part of the Innovation Campus at MSU Bozeman. We were here yesterday for the Commissioner of Securities and Insurance Investing in Montana Summit, and I thought, you know, we haven't had much of a conversation about photonics and quantum, and Bozeman seems to be a real good hub for that, and by golly, we'll be finding that out here, just how good a hub it is. Alex Pruden is with us, CEO and co-founder of Project 11. That is quantum computing dedicated towards security and cybersecurity. And also Daniel Giuliano is with us, director of the Technology Transfer Office at MSU. And Daniel, as we left, we were talking about this visual, and Alex liked it as well, you know, just to take a look at that. But it's like I said, going into the break, it starts a few years back, and then so talk about how this community has grown.
Great. Yeah, the visual that we're looking at is really just a list of all the photonics, optics and photonics companies that have arisen in Montana, most of them, but not all of them, in the Gallatin Valley. Started about 40 years ago and got more and more momentum. In the early days, it was every few years maybe a new company started, and these days it's several companies per year. And wow. Part of that has been in kind of conjunction with the university. The first entrepreneurs, I don't know how big a role the university played in the fact that they came to Bozeman, but very early on, they started working with faculty at the university. And it just grew and grew and grew. The university's gotten stronger and stronger in optics and photonics, and now quantum, having more and more faculty, more and more resources, and there's been more and more companies coming into this sector, either from outside, being started from scratch, or spinning out of existing companies. So today we have 40 to 50 optics and photonics companies in Montana.
Wow.
And over 1,000 employees, and most of those are in the Gallatin Valley. It's probably the highest density photonics cluster in the world. We haven't quite verified that, but there's only a handful of really significant photonics clusters in the U.S. Montana's one, New York has one, Florida, Tucson, Arizona, Colorado. So it's a little bit of a niche, but it's an increasingly important niche. And in this world, everyone knows about Montana. It wasn't always that way. We didn't always have that critical mass. But now, not only nationwide, but even internationally, people say, I want to come to Montana. I want to see what you're doing there. So it's really a testament to Montana that's the case.
What are some of those companies that stand out for you?
Some of the earliest ones are kind of the most interesting ones. There was a company called Big Sky Laser that was started in 1981. It was then purchased over time by Quantel USA, which has now been purchased by Lumibird. Lumibird is a French company, but it has sites all over the world. They make lasers. And, you know, there's other technologies that they have too, but fundamentally, they make lasers. Another one is ILX Lightwave, which was purchased by Newport, which was purchased by MKS. They were started in 1985.
Wow.
It was started by Larry Johnson, who was also the founder of the Montana Photonics and Quantum Alliance itself, right, which is like the industry group that I'm on the board of, trying to further the interests of the companies, support the companies, make sure the world knows that this cluster exists, including, you know, the state and the national legislatures, so they know the importance of the industry and that, you know, Montana is a key part of it.
Alex, let's again fold your business in here. When did you start, and where are you going, kind of? And as Daniel mentioned, legislative help. I think, as you said, no better time, but I'm not, and you talked about the legislature kind of being helpful. I worry, and I think a lot of people are worried, that our ethics are going to lag far behind our technological advancement, and we're going to be cleaning up a lot of things, so to speak. And that's kind of an ethical question. But talk more about Project 11. Where are you at? How long have you been, in operation, and where are you going?
Yep. So we started the company just about 2 years ago. I think quantum computing started accelerating in development about then. And so, you know, these implications around cybersecurity, I think, started becoming more top of mind. So we started 2 years ago, had our first paying customers about a year ago now. And so we're in the midst of growing the business. So,
nice.
So this is my second startup. And you know, whenever you're doing something brand new, you always have a choice of many things, including where to start. And I think, you know, for me, it was a no-brainer to start here. I think for a couple reasons. One, I live here and I love it here. It's hard not to love it here.
Amen.
In Montana, generally across the entire state. But I also think, you know, there is an incredibly diverse array of talent here. We've been talking a lot about the university, you know, specifically, and the technical people that come out of it. But even beyond the university into the community, you know, folks that have, you know, real world hands-on experience in a whole variety of fields are, you know, fantastic in terms of, you know, many, many roles they can fill. In particular here, like, you know, I have some sales folks and some engineers that are kind of from all over, but we're looking specifically to build the headquarters of Project 11 here for support, for research and development, and for all the executive operations and financial functions. And I think, you know, this is to the point earlier around just the density here, I think that's what really stands out. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, Montana punches way above its weight in terms of density of talent. And so that's been great. Now, with regards to, I guess, you know, I think you kind of referenced the ethics, and, you know, maybe some of that, you know, speaks to the concerns that some Montanans have about, you know, if we get too much growth, if we're too successful, everything we're talking about today, all these initiatives, if this J curve gets too steep, you know, what does this mean for Montana? I mean, look, I think in general, we can have our cake and eat it too. I think Montana's culture is very unique and special and should be celebrated. You know, and I think that it's possible to have a rate of growth that both maintains that culture and brings economic development to not just the Gallatin Valley, but to all parts of the state. And different parts of the state, you know, have different advantages and disadvantages, and they're suitable for, you know, for one type of business or another. And so I think there's, you know, there's a real opportunity for Montana to stand out and grow here in a way that's healthy, in a way that's sustainable, in a way that benefits really everybody.
I believe that, and I think you've got to believe that if you're going to be in business. You've got to be more of an optimist. You've got to be realistic, too. But Daniel, maybe you weigh in on that a little bit. Are we approaching the ethical questions that come up maturely? Are we afraid to answer some of those questions? You know, and now we see the landscape being muddied a little bit by maybe misinformation, but still there's not a lot of information out there. So I get that about data centers and about AI and all of that. So we're in a world now, like I kind of just expressed as an everyman, I'm a little scared about what's happening. Are companies addressing that?
You know, it is a little bit scary, but it's also exciting. You know, technology ultimately represents power, right? And you can use the power for good or you can use it for bad. And if you individually and the companies and the society has healthy values, which I think Montana excels at, let's say,
good.
It will lead you down the right path. And if you don't have healthy values, then you're probably going to be making the wrong decisions about it. It's also true that there's really no way to avoid the progression of the technology. Mm-hmm. You might be able to suppress it in your local neighborhood and say, well, I don't like AI and I'm not going to use it. And I'm not going to, okay, well, fine. But everyone else is going to be using it. The rest of the world is going to be advancing it as fast as it possibly can.
Yeah.
So probably a more mature and productive approach is to embrace it and see what it can be used for in the sense of using it for good. And if you are the leader, then you're in the position to be able to kind of make that decision. It was even the same thing, you know, like with nuclear weapons many years ago. It can be, you know, a horrific development. However, the U.S. was the first with nuclear weapons and had the most for a long time and was in a position to make that ethical decision like, no, we're not going to destroy the world. We're not going to destroy all of our enemies. We're going to have this and use them for defensive or keep them for defensive purposes, right? And so if the U.S. is at the forefront of AI, it's going to be in the position to kind of lead ethically. And if it is not the leader in AI, then it will just be those conditions will just be imposed on us.
I think that's pretty impactful what you just said.
Well, I was going to say, you know, and I think that's absolutely right. And I think, you know, but it's also, it's important, you know, for people that do have these concerns or fears, you know, and visions of the future that may differ from what, you know, what they've seen, they should express them. And that's great. I think that's one of the special things about the state is people have the, you know, the freedom and the, you know, the voice. And because it's such a small state, population wise, there's like, the individual voice actually rings much louder, and people should ask these questions. I think this is one of the other special things, I guess, in the history of Montana. And honestly, this is an aspect that's relevant to my company. You know, actually, Montana is unique in all the states in the U.S. in terms of its labor laws. There's actually like some restrictions on, you know, whether or not you can, you know, how you handle, you know, letting go employees if you do. And some companies that, you know, do business over internationally or or just nationally avoid Montana for that reason. But I actually think, to me, it's a big strength because I think it represents a better balance potentially between, you know, managers and workers and, you know, companies and labor generally. And there's the heritage of that was from the mining era, right? When Anaconda, you know, all the copper was coming out of Butte and Anaconda, and obviously at those, you know, turn of the 20th century, enormous amount of abuses. And ultimately Montana inspired, broadly speaking, you know, kind of a progressive labor movement that really got us to the place that we are today. Montana was the forefront of that. I think, you know, in the same way, Montana can lead effectively the conversations that are happening all over the country. Like, this is, people are talking about data centers everywhere. It's not just here, right? So this is, you know, but this is a chance, you know, just like Montana found the right compromise, you know, in those earlier conversations, I think we can lead by example and be the inspiration for other states too in this conversation.
I think that's a great point.
Yeah. Let me take a break and come back. And we're not going to put a bow on it. We're going to just go deeper into it. All right. Yeah. All right. Welcome back here and wrapping it up. Tom Schultz alongside Voices of Montana. Monday's show is not quite put together, so I can't really tease that. Tuesday, we're going to have Shakespeare in the Park in studio. So Riley back in studio. Wednesday, Governor Greg Gianforte is going to join us. And we're at Engine Works here, kind of wrapping up the week in Bozeman, Montana. After the CSI Investing in Montana Summit, go to the podcast page of Voices of Montana. You'll catch that. There's a lot of great information there. And we'll have this one up eventually as well. Ton of stuff. Alex Pruden is with us here. Alex, I appreciate your insight in all of this and just your way of approaching it for us. So thank you. CEO and co-founder of Project 11, cybersecurity, quantum mechanics, and quantum computing. And Dr. Daniel Giuliano, director of the Technology Transfer Office at MSU. I love that title, actually, you know. Alex, maybe we kind of close with that a little bit. No bow on it. There's just a lot of things to talk about. You were, as we were talking in the last break, you were saying that you do have an ethical component to what you do, and I'm glad to hear that, because I think every you know, company that's exploring in this area should have some ethic consideration about what it is they're doing. It may not be huge, but in other cases, it may be really huge.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll just say quickly what it is for me. I think cybersecurity generally, you know, cybersecurity, you're in the business of protecting what people value online and digitally, right? And, often people use our product because they're outsourcing, you know, that protection to us, which makes sense for a great many use cases. I think, though, one thing that we were talking about in the break is just that the default of the internet, and one of the reasons why cybersecurity has become so important, is because the default for many things online is that there is really no privacy, and you have no choice around what data you're sharing and what data you're protecting. It's only after the fact, often when something's gone wrong, that people come to me or other folks in the cybersecurity ecosystem and be like, hey, how can we pull it back? And the answer, unfortunately, is, you know, for some things like your financial accounts, bank accounts, et cetera, it's possible to recover, right? But a lot of your personal identifying information, once it's gone, it's gone. And I think, you know, for me, the ethical aspect of this from a company in my space is, you know, not only doing the best job possible, protecting what people value and putting that, you know, that's like, you know, my integrity on the line, protecting their, what they value, but also it's saying no to, you know, to getting access to information that we really shouldn't have in the first place. And, but, you know, there's many, many, many companies, including the very largest companies, that make a ton of money off of people who've never really consented to giving their data. So there's undoubtedly, back to the question, is, are there customers that will pay for it? The answer in this case is definitely yes. You know, is that a good thing, though? I don't necessarily think that it is. And I think for us, you know, ultimately, from a cybersecurity lens, you know, the short-term benefit that you might be able to get from monetizing people's data doesn't outweigh the long-term cost for using the internet and making it ultimately unusable in a world where that data, that everyone, you know, everyone's identity information is just freely tradable and available for the highest bidder online.
Daniel, we only have like 30 seconds left. Maybe you can put a bow on it.
I'll put a bow on it. Yeah. Something that Alex mentioned during the break that I will rephrase, you know, the best way to protect data is never to collect it in the first place. Because once it's collected, whether by a company or by the government, there's almost 100% chance that it eventually will be leaked and made public.
need to thank Dana, who Dana Terry here with the Montana Photonics and Quantum Alliance. And we've talked with Jason Yeager, who runs that, but Dana's running it as well, right? So I want to give a shout-out to you, Dana. Thank you for helping set this up. Alex, it's so good to meet you. Thank you.
It's
I look forward to
be
chatting
here.
With you again. Thank you for your service. And thank you, Daniel.
Thank you.
Dr. Daniel, appreciate you. And we'll be chatting down the road.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.